I feel like this is like a dire aspect that probably needs to be taught in journalism schools. I know it wasn't part of the program that I took, but I think that there has to be an appreciation for business models within the context of what we do now, because it's just not realistic, you know, to say, no, we aren't going to run advertorial, or, you know, I think there has to be ways to work together without crossing that line. It's an incredibly, it's been an incredibly controversial issue here for the last couple of years, especially where CBC, our public broadcaster, has been concerned.
Welcome to the News Nirvana podcast. I'm your host, Nick Parker. The News Nirvana podcast features conversations with media professionals from across the country, highlighting our ever-evolving business models and showcasing the strong and effective journalism produced each and every day. This podcast is made possible to you by the generosity of Blox Digital. Blox Digital empowers content producers to connect with their worldwide audiences at scale and continuously transform to achieve their business goals. Contact Blox Digital today to learn more about how they can help you thrive, and you can connect with them at BloxDigital.com. Hello, and welcome back to the News Nirvana podcast. I'm your host, Nick Parker. With me this episode is Connie Thiessen, editor at Broadcast Dialogue in Canada. Connie, welcome.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
I'm excited. We met a week or so ago, did a video call just to kind of introduce ourselves and talk. And the more I thought about it, the more I just got excited, because you get to do a lot of kind of the similar thing to what I'm doing, which is just talk to people in the industry and get their stories about what they're doing and what's going on. And so I'm really, really curious to get your take on what you're seeing in today's journalism world, and what people are doing media-wise. Tell us a little bit about Broadcast Dialogue and that podcast that you're doing.
Broadcast Dialogue has been around since the early 90s and was actually founded by a man named Howard Christensen, who was one of the original broadcast news anchors. Broadcast News was one of our national wire services. And so him and the initial editor, Barry Hamlin, who also came out of BN, formed this publication because they saw a need to sort of have cohesive and timely news out of the broadcast sector. And, you know, the publication continues today. We celebrated our 30th anniversary last year in 2022. But to this day, one of the most popular columns that comes out in our weekly e-edition is Revolving Door, which tracks all of the people moves in the industry, which, as you know, are frequent and sometimes hard to track.
Right.
And beyond that, we also write, we have a sign-offs column, which I write probably about, I would say, 200 obituaries a year for Canadian broadcasters, not just broadcasters, also people behind the scenes, you know, anybody basically who has a media or film production background will write, you know, a professional obituary for them. That I think is what has kept the publication going over the years, in addition to all of the other, you know, news that we cover. So the weekly briefing has been around in various formats. It started as a fax that would come to radio stations. And I'm old enough to remember it coming over the fax when I was a really young reporter just starting out. But, you know, over the years it evolved into a glossy magazine. And then, you know, at one point it was a mail out, but also in a newsletter format. And in 2016, when Howard Christensen and his wife Ingrid were set to retire and it looked like BD would fold, our current publisher, Sean Smith, stepped in and took the publication digital. And so I am actually not the first editor under the digital brand. That was held by a woman named Lisa Blackburn, who is a veteran of radio in Halifax, Nova Scotia. And she actually got elected to Halifax City Council. So she was the first digital editor of the publication in 2016. And when it came time for her to take up her council seat, our publisher said, "Lisa, who's going to take over the publication?" And she said, we had worked together, and she said, Connie is going to take it on. So
so you're either saying thank you or you're mad at her.
it's one of those things where I think everything you have worked on up it, you know, encompassing the breadth of your career, culminates into this job that just, you know, turns out to be a really good fit, because I have covered politics, and there, you know, this gig involves a lot of, you know, regulatory coverage. I've worked coast to coast, and so I have a really big network of people in the industry. And, you know, I've always been interested in tech and social media, and I think that this job is just a, you know, it's the place where all of that intersects, and so it is a really good fit from that perspective.
I cannot imagine wanting to leave media for politics after covering politics. I appeal to me.
I have a lot of friends who've done it, and I think they're enjoying it. I mean, you know, as an observer on the sidelines for a lot of years, you end up reading all of that material, all of those city council reports and policy documents. And I think at some juncture, I can see, you know, the urge to get in there and actually attempt to try to move things forward.
I could see other people wanting to do that. Well, let's talk a little bit about covering the media, about watching what's going on, throughout Canada in the media, and what you're seeing from your colleagues.
Well, you know, we're coming out of the pandemic, obviously, and that was really rough on radio in particular, compounded by all of the other things that are happening with consumer choice and competition from digital. I think that we're definitely on the rebound. I think that there are some issues that mirror what's happening in the US, particularly the question of foreign ownership, because we have a lot of, what makes the Canadian media ecosystem unique is that we have a lot of integration from telecom. So our two biggest media conglomerates here in Canada are also in the telecom business. And so I think there has been a very clear message, particularly from Bell Media in the last few years, that, you know, media is a very small segment of that overall business and isn't necessarily a segment that's profitable enough to want to put a lot of money into. And so that leaves the Canadian landscape in, you know, sort of a precarious position. We have a lot of concentration of our media groups.
Yeah, that's a different twist on, I think everybody sees the corporate tightening, right? Tightening of the belt, but that makes it a little different too when it's the giant telecom company as well.
I think for me, it's opened up a lot of questions about radio ownership and who's really benefiting from, you know, being under the umbrella of a lot of these just gigantic publicly traded companies. A lot of radio stations, especially in small and medium markets in this country, started because it was a, isn't it great that we can have local news and someone come out to cover our local events and, you know, have local people on air. And I think that that has been lost to a degree. I think there's a lot of musing in the industry about whether a lot of medium-sized organizations are going to end up, you know, with more ownership of some of these smaller stations, just because from a, you know, publicly traded corporate standpoint, maybe the stations aren't profitable, but are they profitable, you know, to meet that bar that a Bell Media or Rogers might have?
So you're saying they need more of that Big Brother's money?
I think that there has been a propensity to think that year over year profit increases should be the norm. And I think that we have to get back to a place where if you really want to be in the media business, is it all about the profit? You know, journalism has always had, you know, benefactors. And I feel like we're kind of at a place where if journalism is going to survive, it can't really be about that bottom line and the year over year return to shareholders. It has to be back to that place of, isn't it great that we still have this?
We've talked a lot over the last several episodes, really throughout since we started this podcast a couple of years ago, about that change in, you know, 25 whatever years ago that I started in the business, right? And even before that, right, there was a very thick, immovable brick wall between editorial and business,
right,
in your journalism. Yeah. And that wall has thinned over the years, some by necessity, some by just that's how it happened. But we've talked a lot about finding that balance between the two, and a lot of it's because now we need audience revenue is so important now. It's a different piece that we have to have to keep bringing in money to keep the business going, and it's especially more important as we go more toward digital, because just the, you know, the dollar to dollar comparisons aren't the same.
Right. I think we struggle with that here at Broadcast Dialogue as well. There is a firewall, but as a, you know, vendor to the industry in certain respects, I think now that I've been in the business, you know, as long as I have much more of an appreciation for it than I did back when I was a young reporter. When you were asking me that question, I was totally thinking of this time that you know, one at the first station I worked at, where one of the sales guys came and attempted to interfere with something that was airing. And I remember being situated at our newswire computer just in the right spot. He was standing in the hallway that I was able to just put my foot out and shut the door.
That's awesome.
And I'm very punk rock. Like, I am the first person to stand up, you know, for journalism. That's always my first thought. But now that I'm writing for a trade publication, I think I have much more appreciation for that balance. And I think that it's something that I feel like this is like a dire aspect that probably needs to be taught in journalism schools. I know it wasn't part of the program that I took, but I think that there has to be an appreciation for business models within the context of what we do now, because it's just not realistic, you know, to say, no, we aren't going to run advertorial or, you know, I think there has to be ways to work together without crossing that line. It's an incredibly, it's been an incredibly controversial issue here for the last couple of years, especially where CBC, our public broadcaster, has been concerned, because they launched I guess you'd call it a paid or sponsored content arm. And I believe that most of those activities have been paused, but at one juncture it was proposed that, you know, some of their talent would be hosting, you know, these pieces. And I, you know, the outcry was massive, as it should be. I think there's a line there. I think when the line gets blurred, that's the dangerous part of it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I, you know, there's a couple things there that we've talked about recently. You have to know both sides, because you have to work together just to make revenue happen, right? The two teams have to work together. But the other thing is that as we see more and more startups happen, right? And you see people who, and I use myself as an example here, came up editorial, and then all of a sudden I'm trying to run my own.
That's right.
I never took business classes outside of what was required at the beginning of college. I mean, there was no in journalism classes for me. There were no, hey, here's how you run the business, here's how you be a publisher, or how all of that works. And I think, you know, we need more of that, so everybody understands the entire business and how it, and the ecosystem and how it operates and how it can survive.
Are you one of the journalists that can actually do math, Nick? Because, like, I know we had to
talk about sports. We had to
take economics in the program that I went to, but I, you know, you've never seen a room full of journalists as panicked.
Oh, yeah.
as budget day, generally speaking.
The first time I moved, you know, to a job that was on the other side of the wall, those first budget meetings were scary for me, because I hadn't done math outside of, you know, sports statistics or election night, right? Like tabulating the votes. Like that was the most math we did. But yeah, no. So you've had to figure it out. Let's, I want to shift over a little bit, because I do want to ask you about some of the stories. And I saw this, and right before we talked a couple of weeks ago, and you were able to talk to somebody about a cool audio story that just won a Pulitzer Prize, done by Gimlet Media. And I want to know kind of about that story and what you were able to learn.
Oh, I think you're talking about Stolen.
Yeah, Stolen, Surviving St. Michael's.
Surviving St. Michael's, yes. That is, Connie Walker is a Canadian journalist who, you know, did a lot of investigative work during her career here in Canada with CBC. And then a few years ago, went to work for Gimlet in New York. And, you know, she actually, that's a very personal story for her. That starts out in a very interesting way, because her father, who had survived, you know, residential school abuse, went on to become an RCMP officer and actually pulled over one of his abusers. And that's how that podcast starts out. It's a wonderful podcast. It won not just a Pulitzer, but also a Peabody Award. I think I talked about on our video chat last week, there's an interesting sort of side conversation here about Canadian stories and whether the future of telling Canadian stories is going to be in, you know, the hands of a lot of American producers, because that's not the first case of this. Chameleon Wild Boys won the top AMBY award this year, and that's also a Canadian story about a couple of kids who showed up in the interior of British Columbia, I think it was about 10 years ago, and, you know, purported to have been raised in the wilderness. And you know, there's a lot of great Canadian stories. Whether all of them are being told by Canadian outlets is another matter. I think, you know, we're in the wild west of podcasting right now. I mean,
we can't get to do whatever we want.
We're in the wild west of podcasting.
I really enjoy it. And you know, I do a local news when where I'm at as well, but I really like the freedom to storytell in so many different ways. I miss writing sometimes, but there's a lot more freedom and a lot more options in how you tell the story, or to even pair it with writing, right? To pair some audio with your writing, or pair some video, or do all the above. I really am enjoying the freedom of that.
I enjoy it too. I think I mentioned that one of the things I enjoy the most is that, you know, I don't have a consultant in my ear, other than maybe my publisher once in a while.
Right.
I don't have a consultant in my ear, you know, asking me for, you know, more, or, you know, I like the pace of podcasting. And I do like, you know, that there aren't as many limitations on the product. I think that definitely there are people who come on our podcast specifically who probably don't get asked to do podcasts. And I know we've been the first podcast for a lot of people who maybe are not major market talent, but have an interesting story to tell about their media journey.
Yeah. What are you enjoying? Or I guess, what are some good stories that you've found, you know, of those media journeys? And I think, you know, a lot of our audience is, you know, south of your border, right? In the US. So I'm curious kind of what some of those media journeys are like that you're finding as you collect those.
Generally, I have to have a reason to ask somebody to come on the podcast. I think, you know, some of the ones that come to mind, you know, like last year we had, I think it was last year, we had a launch in Kelowna where one of our former radio executives decided that to buy and launch a new independent station just because he missed the business so much and wanted to be a true owner operator in the community where he was living. So after owning a network of stations, now he's got a station in Kelowna. I interviewed somebody else in late December who had been, I don't know if you know about Canadian content regulations here, but our stations have to play a certain amount of Canadian musical selections.
Yeah.
So there's a guy who owns a couple of stations up in the far north who had been, you know, slapped on the wrist for not playing enough Canadian music, but partly due to the fact that it's really complicated. The formula is really complicated. And so even though you're playing Celine Dion or Justin Bieber, who are Canadians by birth, depending on who produced the song and who wrote the song, that might not end up being a Canadian piece of music technically. And so
the artist, the producer, the engineer, all have
exactly.
To be.
And if you look at these, like, you know, hip hop and pop sound songs now, there's like 24 credits on them. So this particular owner decided he was going to flip his station to all Canadian. And so, you know, I love these little, you know, these little stories about innovative things that people are doing, you know, one of the stations I write a lot about is 94.9 The Rock, which is in Oshawa in Greater Toronto. They just revived the all-night radio format with one of our former Much Music icons, Ed the Sock, because, you know, no one's doing all-night DJ formats anymore. Not here.
It's all automated now.
Yeah. So they've just revived that. And it's in its early days. But I like stories of you know, people trying new things and risk taking, because I think over the years the industry has gotten extremely risk averse, and it's been to its detriment, you know.
The News Nirvana podcast is made possible by the generosity of Blox Digital. Blox Digital empowers content producers to connect with their worldwide audiences at scale and continuously transform to achieve their business goals. Contact Blox Digital today to learn more about how they can help you thrive. Connect with them at BloxDigital.com. Yeah, I would agree with that. And I think we're finding that a lot of times it is the smaller independent organizations that are willing to kind of take those bigger risks. Maybe not financial risks, but bigger risks as far as how they're gathering and producing content and delivering content.
Yes, I would tend to agree with that. We have had some really great, so I'm sure you're familiar with the stunt format last summer that launched the Sonic Radio brand in Vancouver, and it's owned by Rogers Sports and Media, but they played Rage Against the Machine in a loop to launch the station without a lot of information, which went global. I you know, the industry needs more of that, you know. Right. there's this sort of famous promotions stunt that happened here in Vancouver where there was an album release and somebody drove a tank down West Georgia Street and parked it out in front of C-Fox, I think. It predates me, but like,
my first question is, where does one get a tank?
I feel like the industry needs more of that, and you know, we've lost it. You know, a lot of it has to do with,
my first question is, where does
budget constraints? But part of what made radio great and was, you know, that edge.
Well, you obviously come from radio. You cover a lot of radio. We've talked about podcasting too. What's that relationship between those two delivery systems, you think? Is one pulling from the other? Are they helping each other?
They're still finding their way. As far as the public broadcaster is concerned, CBC Podcast is doing incredibly well. I believe CBC Front Burner, their daily podcast, is still the most listened to Canadian produced podcast. The most listened to podcast in Canada. Do you have any guesses?
Guesses. Is it Broadcast Dialogue?
It's
okay.
Dialogue. It's NBC Dateline, which might surprise you.
The top podcasts
you know, from a Canadian produced perspective, are predominantly CBC entities that are radio programs that have been reproduced for the podcast format. I'm in downtown Vancouver, so any matter of things could be happening outside. So I apologize for the sirens.
News.
Sure. At any rate, yes.
Hey, I just think of it as breaking.
A lot of our most listened to podcasts are generally American. Smartless performs really well, which technically has a Canadian on it, Will Arnett. But yeah, I think everybody's still trying to find their way in, you know, in terms of where that relationship between radio and podcasting really is going to make a dent. I think that most stations are offering some content on demand now was good. It's really nice to see that we are not having to have those conversations that we were having in 2019 pre-pandemic about online presence, because, you know, prior to the pandemic, when we crossed that 50% streaming threshold for radio, I think we were right. having to have all of these crazy discussions about whether your station should be online and whether you should be producing a podcast. I think all of those conversations have now advanced to another level, and I'm really, really happy about that.
Right, right. I think for the holdouts, the decision was made for them by the pandemic. I mean,
yes, I think if you're relying solely on your, your over the air signal now, I would question your business model. I'm sure there are a few holdouts, but.
Well, yeah, I mean, even for content, you got to meet your audience where they're at. And even for your advertising, your business partners, you've got to help them meet the audience where they're at. And it's all on streaming.
Yeah. And those are absolutely the discussions that the industry is having. BC Association of Broadcasters just had their first incarnation since the pandemic 2 weeks ago. And it was very much a digital first conversation, and the conversation is being had at all levels of the industry, in part because the Online Streaming Act has begun public consultations as it, you know, makes its way into cohesive policy, and that will determine what obligation foreign streaming entities have to produce Canadian content. And I know that's a theme, and, you know, in this conversation.
You've brought it up a couple times, and I'm curious what some of the background context is there.
It's what we write about, often, to the chagrin of a lot of broadcasters, because we just had a radio review completed in December, and it didn't have a lot of substantial change for radio broadcasters where Canadian content obligations are concerned. But there definitely is huge concern about the impact that digital is having on broadcasters, and not just broadcasters, print media as well. And Canadian content contributions, I think, you know, a lot of this is concern about Canadian stories or Canadian programming or Canadian point of view getting lost in the shadow of all of this global content.
Are there efforts by Canadian media organizations to go and start, like, to increase collection of those stories?
I think everybody's resources, I mean, there are obligations. So the Online Streaming Act will put those obligations onto foreign streamers with what they're proposing is with revenues over 10 million annually. So that would, you know, encompass Netflix, YouTube TV, you know, anything streaming in Canada that is in excess of that. OTT access revenue is forecast to grow 18% according to the latest convergence report in Canada. And I think it was up 23% this past year. And that's mostly foreign digital. I mean, when you look at the individual revenue of all of those streamers, they're all still below the 10% threshold in terms of their penetration. But I mean, it's a huge, huge piece of, the share pie. I think that's a concern. The question that comes up is, when you have streamers like BritBox, for example, where do they fit into this? Like BritBox, why would BritBox have Canadian content? I don't know. Maybe they just pay in to a fund, but.
Because that's obviously not their, lane.
No, it's not. And I think that argument could probably be made for a lot of really niche offerings, those are the conversations that are going to be had as part of these public policy consultations.
You in your role just to follow along and keep up on those stories and how that happens, and then obviously then informing everybody.
I feel like those would be fun for you. It's definitely interesting. We actually, our publisher acquired another publication, cart.ca, last summer, which is more based in regulatory, and so this relieves a lot of pressure on me as an editor on my side. Just because, I can let them get deep into the regulatory weeds and I can stick to our lane, which is, more about format and programming and, production.
I'm looking at our clock, and so I want to be cognizant of your time. And as we wrap things up, just a couple of things that I want to make sure we get to. What are, as you're looking ahead to the future, what are some things that you're looking forward to covering in the production world there in Canada?
Radio Days North America, which is the first incarnation of the Radio Days Europe conference in North America, is happening in Toronto in early June. And so there's going to be a lot of discussion about AI. Of course, Daniel N. Standegg from Futuri is going to be doing a keynote about Radio GPT. I don't know if you've heard about this product, but
I am fascinated by all of these.
So you can basically program an entire station using artificial intelligence. And, if for people who are familiar with Futuri's software, it can actually scrape the internet for topical content based on, what's trending on social media and create a script, read by AI generated voices. So, I mean, this is in its infancy right now. I don't know if you're familiar with the recent Drew Carey controversy. So he tried out some type of AI powered solution on his Sirius XM show, which was kind of a failure. Like I think it was clear that it was Drew Carey the robot, not Drew Carey the human. A conversation about radio is a medium which was always meant to be a source of human connection, right? and now you've introduced robots, and so we're going to be able to talk to Futuri about that. But
that's a common conversation, I think, everywhere where we're talking about AI, right? Is figuring out, okay, this is cool, this is fascinating, I want to play with all the toys, but also how do we actually use the tool to make what we do better? Right. I think that's.
Yeah. At the last conference I was at, Valerie Geller, who's a well-known consultant in the industry, said, like, I live in LA. If there's an earthquake, do I care? If AI is telling me, you know, what's closed, what's open, what's the weather, or no, I don't, you know? So, you know, there are probably moments where AI could be a vital resource. Can it replace on-air talent? This is coming up totally in the WGA strike as well, because a lot of production and talent contracts now are like, we can use your voice in any way, you know, any way we deem
right, yeah.
it. And so people are concerned, particularly voiceover talent, about what that means for the future of the industry.
Right, right. Well, the last thing I want to get from you is, if people want to follow along Broadcast Dialogue, they want to follow you on the social medias, how can they do that?
Broadcastdialogue.com. We are on Twitter, LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram, and Broadcast Dialogue, the podcast, is available on all of the major streaming platforms.
I'm a big fan of that. I don't like the podcasters who choose just one. I get it if you get paid a lot of money to just do one, but those are few and far between. But I really like people putting them out.
Yeah.
I agree. You be where your audience is, as you mentioned.
Awesome. Well, Connie, thank you so much for your time today. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Thanks for asking me.
That'll wrap us up for this episode. We'll talk to everybody next time. The News Nirvana podcast is available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or most any of your favorite podcast apps. The News Nirvana podcast is made possible by the generosity of Blox Digital. Connect with them at BloxDigital.com. The News Nirvana podcast is produced by Fredcasts. Think, speak, act.